Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hello, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is wonderful.
This is a show where we talk about the stuff, the goods, baby.
The good stuff.
The goods. We got them. Yep. This is a show which we didn't do last week.
Yeah, thank you all for your patience.
For your patience with us. We had a little vacay because we were...
A little family vacay.
A little family vacay. We're having a pretty tough time. I think it's easy to say for us. We're all having a tough time right now. It's not a competition, though, folks. And, we took a little time off for ourselves. And
well, yeah, Griffin hadn't seen his bros in almost a year.
And they had not, more importantly...
They had not met our new child.
Right, there was a lot of stuff that happened kind of all at once.
Yeah.
And it turned out that our plans that we had for them to meet Gus, weren't going to happen. And so we hopped on this family trip and... It was nice and hectic and stressful and lovely and but we're back now and we're ready to hit the ground running with the goods. You got any little goods?
Are we changing the name of our
Small
show?
Wonders is now Little Goods.
I like that.
Yeah.
Oh man. Can you go first?
I can. Our friend Evan Minsker sent me and our extended fam a recipe on Food Network from Trisha Yearwood called Garth's Breakfast Bowl, and I can't stop thinking about it. Can I just read it?
Cause yeah, please.
It's a four-step recipe. I'm not going to read all the ingredients because one of them comes at you so fast and furious in a way that this is a breakfast bowl that Garth Brooks made. Okay. Step one, in a large skillet, melt the butter and scramble the eggs. Okay. So far, we're in breakfast bowl territory.
Scrambled eggs, yeah.
Step two, in a separate large skillet, cook the hash browns according to package directions. I love that.
Yeah,
it's like refer to ancillary materials. Go to Appendix B to find out how to cook the hash
browns. Yeah, you don't need to make hash browns. You've got a box right now that will tell you.
Check this. Step three, in a third skillet.
Whoa. That seems unnecessary.
Break up the sausage with a wooden spoon and cook until browned. Remove with a slotted spoon and transfer to a bowl. Cook the bacon in the same skillet until crispy.
Whoa.
Drain on paper towels, tear into pieces, and set aside. That's all step three. You're supposed to be doing all that stuff at once in your three discrete skillets.
Wow, you have I don't think we have three skillets.
Are you ready for the fucking twist of a lifetime?
Seems pretty greasy, by the way, so far, but go ahead.
Oh, that's going to be the least of your concerns when we hit step four. Cook the tortellini according to package directions. Layer a large bowl with hash brown, sausage, bacon, tortellini, eggs, and cheese, and serve. End of recipe.
Pasta, not typically a breakfast food, but more, I wonder, is it supposed to be tortilla?
Nope. The ingredients, 2 tablespoons butter, 8 large eggs, 1 16-ounce bag frozen hash browns, such as tater tots, thawed, 1 pound pork sausage, 1 pound bacon, 1 9-ounce package cheese and roasted garlic tortellini.
Unreal.
Unreal, Garth and Trisha. Garth.
Why, Garth?
Garth, you made some hits. Do you think maybe... He sort of got very experimental with food when Chris Gaines was around. And this is like a hold of, like when Chris Gaines was around, Chris Gaines ate some wild shit. And there's a fancy boy who likes tortellini, which we all think is the fanciest. It looks like little beautiful rings. So it is, of course, the fanciest pasta.
It's so strange to me that, you know, I could see in a pinch, let's say we don't have enough food items.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll have tortellini for breakfast, but there is more than enough food items.
I can't see that. if we look around the house, and this is a very privileged position to take, and I get that, folks, but if we look around the house and it's like, we don't got eggs, we don't got sausage, we don't got hash browns, we don't have bacon. We got tortellini, though. Hon, do you want to eat tortellini for breakfast? Let's just run out and grab something.
I would do it.
Because it's tortellini.
I would do it, honey.
Okay. I think also I don't really like tortellini very much.
Really?
Yeah, I like a long noodle.
Huh.
Yeah. So thank you, Evan. for sending that my way. And Justin, you both really put a spring in my step this week.
I thought of my little good.
Good, good, good.
The chicken nugget at Burger King.
Oh, God, yes.
Really paid off for us.
Really, in a big way.
We, when we travel, typically one thing we can count on is the chicken nugget. And typically this comes from an establishment called McDonald's.
Yes.
But at the airports we were at, for whatever reason, Burger King had the monopoly.
A stranglehold.
And I was a little nervous because, discerning four-year-old, I thought he is going to see this nugget and recognize it is not his beloved one.
No.
But he gladly ate it, and I had some as well.
Good fucking nuggets,
good
man.
Good nuggets.
Do you remember when they added chicken fries to the menu and America lost its fucking mind?
Those were not good.
They're long nuggets, honey.
But they because of the thinness of the chicken fry,
yeah,
they became like rubbery, there wasn't enough like juicy meat inside.
I disagree. I think the dippability of these bad boys,
yeah, but they just didn't hold
and
up
and getting
well.
Chicken fries with a side of fries is like, yes, give me long food. Exclusively small long foods, please. I'm dipping them in the smallest container of barbecue sauce.
It's just weird to like a food because of its dippability. Like, you
Is that weird?
You recognize you're saying nothing about the taste or mouthfeel of the item, just the fact that you can easily dunk it in something else.
Let me hit you with this then.
Okay.
And this could be the show. But then it would be my brother, and me. Yeah. What do you like better, Fritos or Fritos Scoops? When it's time to dip. Yeah. Case closed.
But I would never say, first and foremost, I like a Frito because of its dippability.
No, but
I like
you
the
would
salty
say,
crunchy.
You would say, when it's time to scoop, I would like the Frito designed specifically for that function.
Yeah, but to look at a chicken fry and to say, oh, that's good dippability, like first thing out of your mouth. Like,
yeah.
The taste, whatever.
Maybe you have like a small flask. You have like an Erlenmeyer flask full of barbecue sauce, and a regular chicken nugget's not going to get past that narrow mouth.
But I would say a chef at a fancy restaurant who doesn't provide you with salt and pepper and seasoning, because the idea is that their food doesn't necessarily require additional elements, that if you are looking at a food anticipating a need to dip, perhaps the food is not good enough on its own.
Yeah. Maybe it's also, by the way, just because I haven't had Burger King in a while.
Yeah, it's true.
But their flame-grilled burgers are good as fuck.
Oh, yeah. See, I didn't have the burger.
I like that smoky flavor. It's good in my mouth. And that's all I got to say about Burger King, our sponsor this week, the BK. It's just we all as a nation have slept on Burger King for a while. Like, McDonald's always doing a thing, and then Wendy's popped up and it was like, we got fucking bacon monster, and we're like, huh, that's fun.
Can I say we had basically stopped entirely eating fast food until we had a son that was very, very picky, and now it's like we are so intimately familiar with all of the fast food chains.
Yes, we still don't get food from them. We get food, like, we don't we're not, I mean, occasionally. It's been a minute though since I've had a Mac of any size.
Yeah.
God, you remember that Mac? What was it? The Mac Deluxe? What was it?
Oh, I don't. Gosh. You
I know
recall?
So much deep McDonald's apocrypha.
This is why the Munch Squad segment is so successful on your show.
I know. We're all very enthusiastic.
Yeah.
About it.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I go and do my thing?
Yes.
Because my thing is sandcastles. I like sandcastles. They're so fun. They are the premier beach activity.
I just had a really strong memory of a year where Longmire Sculpture Park, my beloved St. Louis institution, did like a whole sandcastle exhibit.
That makes sense.
Where they had like multiple castles that you could visit, which seems very like a difficult decision to make because it is so day two it rains, like what do you
well
do?
There's ways of for like art exhibit
for
sand castles, for preserving them, whether it's with a adhesive spray, which mm-hmm. is what they do at a lot of sort of like big sandcastle competitions, or just mixing in sort of clay composite into the mix to give it a little bit more.
I've never seen you make a sandcastle, I don't think. I don't even know your technique.
I mean, I made them at this trip that we just
took. I know, but I didn't see it. It was gone by the time I arrived.
Yeah, it was, I mean, they were brutal tides, and we'll get into that. All right, we have fun building sandcastles. Henry got hit by a pretty, like, bonkers rogue wave that gave him swimmer's ear, which sort of cast a shadow, I would say, over the trip. Before that, we made some good sandcastles, and he was so
devastated when I came back. He indicated to me that the castle had been lost, and he seemed really worried that you were going to be upset about it.
I know, it was so sad. It made me think. I wanted to tell him, like, it's okay, buddy. That's what happens with sandcastles.
Yeah,
there's something beautiful about that. But okay, there's a lot about the process I like. When you find the right, like, sand with the right moisture content so that it slides right out of one of those, like, bucket molds.
Okay.
Oh, that's good stuff. Because yeah. It's hard. If the sand's too dry, it just falls apart. If it's too wet, then it forms a suction in the bucket,
right,
and then it won't come out. And, it, you know, you got to get that perfect porridge, which is tough to do. I don't even do it all the time, you know, when I'm making sandcastles every couple weeks or so in the basement. We don't have a basement. What I like even more, though, and I think is true for everyone, more than just making the castle, is the infrastructure. Making, like, the moat that goes around it, or the swimming pool for the imaginary sand people to play inside of, or the flood walls that could potentially hold back the waves. Although they almost exclusively are not effective at that, because as it turns out, when water hits sand, the sand goes, oh, okay, and just kind of goes and just leaves. The water takes it and it's gone. But just like trying to build defenses for it, like getting into structural engineering. Maybe I'll build a fence with little sticks. That could be fun. I'm just thinking about this now. Wouldn't it be fun to build a... Well, actually, it's dangerous because somebody could step on that.
And also it's difficult to find sticks on the beach, typically.
I guess so. I mean, driftwood. That's what I like, is using reclaimed... It's a multimedia mm-hmm. project. Because mm-hmm. you can use driftwood. You could use a bird. It's a big fish that you find. I also like the decoration stage a lot, like picking up like washed up kelp and draping that on there, or getting a bunch of shells and kind of pressing that into the work, or using like a fork or something to scrape some texture into the walls.
Ooh, that's good stuff.
Poking holes, poking little windows in it. Like there's so many ways to get creative with sandcastles.
So for you, it's not necessarily about height. Because I feel like
I don't care about the height.
A lot of folks out there are really, they're interested in the height.
No, I don't. That's not my thing. Like the castle is secondary. The castle is the thing to protect and decorate with infrastructure and decor. It's not the star of the show for me. Mm-hmm. For me, it's more about the utilities offered by the by the installation. And there's also something genuinely very zen about sandcastles, in that you know while you are making it, unless apparently you are a 4-year-old son, that it is inherently a doomed enterprise. Like it is very impermanent. Uh-huh. I have this very like vivid memory of a beach trip we took when I was like little with our family friends, and we were staying at this hotel in Myrtle Beach that was like facing the ocean, and we were like 10 stories up. And I remember we had spent the morning building this huge sandcastle with all of these sort of defensive structures, and then like in the afternoon and evening when the tide started to roll in, we just sat on the balcony for hours and watched our little sandcastle, like try to fend off the waves until eventually, like it was just all traces of it had been completely washed away.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like, you know, it's going to happen. And if you are okay with that, then it's just a question of like, how long can my brave little toaster like hold off the ravages of the world? And when like not to get too like existential about it, but like,
I think it's too late.
It's too late, I guess. You could say the same for over the grand scope of everything, like any creative endeavor. So if you think about a sandcastle and you think like, well, this doesn't have to be perfect because it's going to be, you know, eroded by the ravages of time at some point, you could apply that logic to a lot of creative endeavors that would make you not approach them with like complete perfectionist like attitude that would keep you from making the thing and having fun with it in the first place. I think there's a lot to learn from sandcastles.
This is a very glasses half full approach, because what you said to me now just sounded like a little depressing.
Really?
Yeah, the idea that you could put energy into something that is very fulfilling, but that has no permanence.
Well, the energy has merit. That is, yeah, that is the thing. Like it is the act of creating the thing that has the value, not the creation itself. I know that that is maybe a challenging statement for this show, but I don't know. It's a philosophy that I think serves me fairly well in my more professional creative endeavors.
Yeah.
And also for sandcastles. And all right, I'll turn it around. I know the thing you've been wondering since I started talking about this is like, what's the history of sandcastles? And I'm here to tell you that I don't know that. But I can tell you what the biggest sandcastle ever made was, because it was made earlier this year.
Whoa.
In Denmark. There was a small seaside town called, I'm going to mispronounce a lot of things here in the next like 30 seconds, Blokhus, and a dude named Wilfred Stidger and 30 other sculptors built a monolithic pyramid-esque sandcastle that stands nearly 70 feet tall.
Whoa.
And it's made from almost 5,000 tons of sand and clay.
I was thinking as you were describing this, I was like, oh, I hope you can walk into it.
You can't walk into it. It is a wild. Look up a picture of it. If you search like biggest sandcastle ever made Denmark, okay, you will get there. But it is like a multi-tiered almost city. Like it is like a keep made out of all multiple buildings and things like that. But what's wild isn't just the intricacy of it and the scope of it, but also that it is about the role that COVID-19 has played in our lives over the last year and a half, which is wild. There is a model of the virus wearing a crown at the top of the sculpture.
Whoa.
And in an interview, Wilfred Stidger said, it's ruling our lives everywhere. It tells you what to do. It tells you to stay away from your family and not go to nice places. Don't do activities. Stay home. He channeled his COVID anxiety into a 70-foot tall sandcastle made out of 5,000 tons of sand and clay.
That's so interesting. All those people that are like, hey, look at the sourdough I made. And he's like, oh, interesting. Here's my thing that I did.
Just a little 70-foot tall sandcastle. Those sandcastles, I really like them, man. I am afraid of a lot of the things that live in the ocean, which maybe I've chosen a strange topic to do a whole season of The Adventure Zone around, but I'm also not a fan of like, you know, sunbathing, or I like chilling in the shade on the beach and reading a book. That's like my shit. But if I'm going to not be doing that, I want to be building a sandcastle.
Now, I'm curious, do you have opinions on beach sandcastle versus sandbox sandcastle?
I mean, sandbox sandcastle, you're not going to get the mixed media.
Yeah,
You're not going to get the water content. Like, it's good practice, I guess. But it's not the big show, as
the
we
big
call
show,
it,
yeah,
in the sandcastle community. Hey, can I steal you away?
Yeah.
Oh, we got a couple blumper bones here, and this first one is for Joseph Lynn, and it's from Stephanie, who says, hey, sweets, I can't believe we have been married a decade already. So glad you were willing to be my blind date to prom 13 years ago. I like you and I love you. Our life together is the most wonderful thing ever. Let's get drunk, order pad thai, and play some video games. Happy anniversary. That's a fun night. Yeah. We just had some pad thai last night. It was pretty good.
That's true. So
I'm feeling the pad thai.
Yeah. Parts. No drunk, but
yeah,
definitely pad thai.
The pad thai parts.
And if there's Griffin, there's always video games.
Hey, that's not fair. I'm not always playing video games while we're hanging out, you know, having us time.
Well, not always.
Not always, but sometimes.
Yeah.
I almost figured out how to play Free Cell, okay? And then, yeah, I'm on my phone.
Is that all you're doing over there?
Almost exclusively.
Wow.
You see me playing on my phone or on the Switch, it's all Free Cell. Because it's just like, it's really complicated.
Mm-hmm.
It's like solitaire, but it's not.
Can I read this next one?
Okay.
This is for Amy. It is from Austin. Hey, my dude, I bought a Jumbo John so you'd hear it and go, huh, those people have the same names as us. Then ponder that until I said something more specific to our personal lives. But I guess you'll never unravel this mystery. Don't ask me about it or I'll just raise my eyebrows or something. Love ya and bless up.
That's so good.
That is so good. I love that. I love that. Very accurate description of how these things often go out into the world, which
yes.
is like, I have that name and I know someone with that name.
Yeah.
Could it be?
And it is.
It is this time.
It is Austin and Amy. But Amy, you know, because you got it. But Austin, surprise, we got you.
Mr. Robot Man, what are you doing?
I'm just taking one last look at my coworkers.
Every journey comes to an end.
Remember, Plek, the space will be with you, always.
Sorry, who are you again?
Master Kieran.
Oh, right, sorry.
Just calling in.
Friendships will be tested.
Dar, you have to do it. You have to shoot Plek.
Okay.
You shot him so fast.
Destinies will be fulfilled.
I've become a complete bird. I'm flying.
Guys, we don't have a choice. We have to put on a show.
We can do it in the old barn. We've got the costumes. We've got a stage. We can do it, you guys.
Mission to Zix. The final season on Maximum Fun.
Hey, what do you want to talk about today?
I want to talk about something that I'm surprised I have not talked about before, but according to my look through the index, I have not. And I think this is going to be a little contentious.
Uh-oh.
Tie-dye.
Yeah.
You don't really like it, do you?
I do not care for it.
Yeah.
I don't have anything against it. It's just not something I wear actively.
Is it all of the color? Is it just the so many color?
No, I think that wearing tie-dye intimates a certain...
like a party lifestyle?
cultural lifestyle.
Okay.
That, and it's not just one, there's several. There's several different sort of, I would say, tie-dye identities.
Uh-huh.
Or tie-dentities, if you will.
Of course.
And I don't know that I necessarily apply to any of them, right? Like, you can live that sort of hippie life. Uh-huh. You can live that, I think there's a beach life for sure that's uh-huh. got that, like a casual relaxation life. Or I also think there's like a church mission trip life where you get that tie-dye.
So that's what I was going to ask you, because I'm wondering if you have participated in tie-dye and or had any tie-dye items at any time.
It will not surprise you to learn that the latter of those three examples I just gave was one that I had.
That's what I was going to say. Because so tie-dye for, I feel like, our generation is really just more about like camp life, you know?
Interesting, yeah.
Like that was my experience, was like one year at art camp, we like all tie-dyed shirts and shoes and whatever we could get our hands on. And so for me, like, my nostalgia for tie-dye is like a very artsy, crafty one.
See, and maybe that's part of it for me, is that I am 34 years old and I don't actually know how you do tie-dye.
Oh.
I have tie-dye shirts, but I've never really successfully made one, and I'm not really sure how it works, and I'm too afraid to find out at this point.
I have quite a few tie-dye items, and sure. I find myself always kind of seeking out more. My banner pieces of tie-dye clothing right now are like overall shorteralls that I love. We also have a little onesie that my friend Krista made, our oldest son, that now our youngest son can wear.
If I could save time in a bottle.
You see, you sing that, but you just did the sandcastle segment. And so I don't even know where you stand, really.
I can feel both things.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I know. I'm a complicated man.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love it. I love the artsy crafty element, as I mentioned. I love the colors. I love that they're always a little different. Like if you get like a real handcrafted item.
Sure.
And there is a rich history there that goes back before the 60s.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
This is actually
to the roaring 20s.
Even before that.
To the zany tens.
So tie-dye is a little difficult to track because textiles decay faster than a lot of other mediums. And so it's difficult to say, like, this is the first piece of tie-dye. But they can date Chinese pieces from the 5th to 6th century, which is kind of incredible. Peru is another place where there has been a lot of early tie-dye. In Japan, tie-dye has been around since 552 CE. You can also find some tie-dye in India done as early as 4000 BC.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Those are the places I would assume, like places that have a history of like very colorful like art and with things like dye, it's like a lot of different civilizations figured out how to dye things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It came out of a lot of different kind of like cultural ceremonies and religious ceremonies, and also just, you know, the availability of the items that you could use.
Well, they didn't have rubber bands.
Dye fabric, true.
So I don't know what was it like in like some sort of like awful like entrails or something like that.
I mean, I can tell you that string is something that's been around for a while.
Oh yeah,
and you can also bind.
Oh yeah,
with string.
I was thinking like tended, like, you know, sinew.
I mean, maybe.
Okay.
So in the U.S., it was actually the Great Depression when women were learning how to tie-dye at home.
That doesn't sound depressing at all.
There were some shelf dyes available, like the one used today, which is the RIT, R-I-T dye.
Oh,
RIT. Was created in 1918. That's what a lot of people use to tie-dye today.
Mm-hmm.
But you could also, you know, use blackberries and cabbage and marigolds and, you know, any number of plant items. And it's the 60s, 1969, where you saw like your Janis Joplin, you know, your Joe Cocker on stage at Woodstock wearing the tie-dye. There is some, because everyone like associates it with the 60s, but it's like, well, how did it come back? And there's an interesting theory that the Peace Corps showed up in 1961, where people were traveling all over the place, and that potentially volunteers in West Africa brought back kind of this knowledge of dyeing fabric.
Interesting.
With them. But so tie-dye has this huge like surge in the 60s and 70s, and then the 80s gets super preppy and it disappears. And then I feel like right around when I was like middle school, high school, there was like a resurgence.
Yeah.
Like mid to late 90s, there was this kind of like reemergence of this like hippie.
Well, I genuinely think it was because that's when we got into like wild hypercolor shit. Like that mid to late 90s aesthetic was like overwhelmingly neon, like bonkers.
Well, and there was also Woodstock came back in the 90s too.
I guess so,
that might
have
been part of it. And then as recent as like this year, there has been this huge like tie-dye movement. I don't know if you remember this. I had actually forgotten about it until I was researching this. But in the Olympics, Team USA had this whole like line of like red, white, and blue.
Oh, yeah.
Tie-dye, including these like bucket hats that I guess you can purchase now as a...
You just showed me the copy of the article. Not the... There we go.
I'll show you the pictures. See?
Yeah, those are nice.
Mm-hmm.
Those are nice.
I guess it was Ralph Lauren that did the whole like tie-dye motif.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like all over the place again.
I mean, it's a hobby. Everyone got hobbies.
that's the thing. A lot of people are kind of associating it with the like pandemic, you know, home activity.
You know what's wild? Quick sidebar.
Yeah.
Last year I got into electronics. It was like my hobby. It was like modding controllers and Switches and old Game Boys. And then I kind of fell off of it earlier this year because things started to get a little bit better. Yeah. And now that we're starting to turtle up a little bit more, I've been getting really interested in doing it again.
I wonder what that is.
I don't know.
It's almost like a reflex.
It seems reflexive.
our friend Cassie, I know, got real into tie-dye and gave us some tie-dye socks very early on in the pandemic. And it was something I was planning to get into at the beginning of quarantine. And then for various reasons, just didn't.
Yeah.
Largely because it is a pretty lengthy process.
By various reasons, you mean you grew a child?
Yeah, I started growing a child. And also, it's a very kind of time-intensive process. So there's the wrapping of the rubber bands.
Oh, sure.
And then there's the soaking of the dye in various like segments, you know, of depending on what pattern you want. And then there's like washing and then soaking, you know, there's like a multi-step.
I don't know. You can say all these things. I don't know.
Do you remember the birthday party we went to where tie-dyeing was involved for the children?
Yeah. Did I do it? No.
No, I guess I did.
I don't know. I don't know how it works.
The trick is to let the dye soak long enough and then wash it, I believe, in cold water. So that you don't lose all of the dye.
But it's just the way it's crimped that it makes the crazy
yeah,
patterns.
You kind of swirl it and then rubber band it. So yeah, the spiral of it can create kind of like a spiral pattern, or if you can fold it certain ways to create different types of patterns. It's kind of like origami in that way.
It's the chaos, I think, I don't like. I think it's the chaos.
The chaos of tie-dye.
I like instructions, you know, connect point A to point B to make C happen. But tie-dye's like, just twist it up, baby, dip it in.
That is true. There is something to be said for the fact that you do not know what it's going to look like.
I don't like that.
Until you take everything out. I have made quite a few tie-dye items that just look splotchy. There is no discernible pattern.
Yeah, I can't.
I like the multicolor. I think I might actually like the chaos.
I always say that about you. Rachel McRoy, agent of chaos.
I'm the Dharma to your Greg.
Stop saying that. You know we're both Greg.
I know.
Rachel and I have this conversation a lot. When one of us wants to say or do something fun and the other one's not necessarily in the right headspace for it, we will accuse one another of being the Greg and we're the Dharma.
Ultimately, we're both Greg.
But whenever we talk about it for more than 2 minutes, we come to the realization that we're both Greg. We're Greg and Greg. And that if one of us was a Dharma, this relationship probably would not work.
That's true.
Probably would not function.
I always think about this scene, and I don't know if it actually happened, but this commercial or whatever preview or teaser for an upcoming episode where Dharma is dancing on a table and Greg is standing on the floor looking up at her. And I think, I wouldn't be on the table. Both you and I would be on the ground looking up at this phantom Dharma in our relationship.
I'm imagining like, I did tie-dye on your business papers. Like, yeah. Oh, man, you're so free-spirited. I would be like, my business papers, Dharma. I need these for business tomorrow. Hey, thanks to Bowen and Augustus for the use of our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. And thank you to Maximum Fun for having us on the network. There's so many great shows on Max Fun that you should go check out and listen to, Fanti. And
if you haven't checked out Tiny Victories, I feel like there's a lot of crossover potential between us and Tiny Victories.
Yeah, for sure. And Mission to Zix, whole bunch of shows for you to go listen to. We, and by we, I mean Montaigne, just put up the music video and full song for
it's so charming.
My Life Is Better With You. You can find that at our McElroy Family YouTube channel. And I think that's about it. We got stuff at McElroyMerch.com you can go check out now. But that's it. Thanks again for being patient with us. We'll be back next week. The regular old episode, but this is a fun one. I've really enjoyed doing this show with you today. I always enjoy doing it, but this is one that I've delighted in. I delight in your presence.
Oh, thank you, dear. Yeah, we took a week off.
That's not it. It's just I'm full of love. I'm overwhelmed with love for
we
you.
We also haven't had a conversation this long in
that's true.
In over a week.
Not because we're fighting, but because our children are conspiring against us.
There were so many times this past week where Griffin would turn to me and ask me a question and want to talk about something, and I would be like, can we do this later?
Yeah, because we would have each one child clambering all over us. Mm-hmm. But that's the life we chose.
It is. You know, it is.
It is.
It's a long game, parenthood.
Yeah.
I still imagine a time where both of us could sit with our young children at a restaurant and enjoy a meal together as a family. It can't be that far away.
It can't. But it is?
But it feels like it.
Oh, no!
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.